The Mystery of the Blue Train, Agatha Christie. Chapter 11, Murder. Catherine wakened the next morning to brilliant sunshine. She went along to breakfast early, but met none of her acquaintances of the day before. When she returned to her compartment, it had just been restored to its daytime appearance by the conductor, a dark man with a drooping mustache and melancholy face. "Madame is fortunate," he said. "The sun shines. It is always a great disappointment to passengers when they arrive on a gray morning." "I should have been disappointed, certainly," said Catherine. The man prepared to depart. "We're rather late, madame," he said. "I'll let you know just before we get to Nice." Catherine nodded. She sat by the window, entranced by the sunlit panorama. The palm trees, the deep blue of the sea, the bright yellow mimosa came with all the charm of novelty to the woman who for 14 years had known only the drab winters of England. When she arrived at Cannes, Catherine got out and walked up and down the platform. She was curious about the lady in the mink coat and looked up at the windows of her compartment. The blinds were still drawn down, the only ones to be so on the whole train. Catherine wondered a little, and when she re-entered the train, she passed along the corridor and noticed that these two compartments were still shuttered and closed. The lady of the mink coat was clearly no early riser. Presently, the conductor came to her and told her that in a few minutes the train would arrive at Nice. Catherine handed him a tip. The man thanked her, but still lingered. There was something odd about him. Catherine, who had at first wondered whether the tip had not been big enough, was now convinced that something far more serious was amiss. His face was a sickly pallor. He was shaking all over, and looked as if he'd been frightened out of his life. He was eyeing her in a curious manner. Presently, he said abruptly, "Madame will excuse me, but is she expecting friends to meet her at Nice?" "Probably," said Catherine. "Why?" But the man merely shook his head and murmured something that Catherine couldn't catch and moved away, not reappearing until the train came to rest at the station when he started handing her belongings down from the window. Catherine stood for a moment or two on the platform, rather at a loss, but a fair young man with an ingenuous face came up to her and said rather hesitatingly, "Miss Gray, is it not?" Catherine said that it was, and the young man beamed upon her seraphically and murmured, "I'm Chubby, you know, Lady Tamplin's husband. I expect she mentioned me, but perhaps she forgot. Have you got your little billet bagage? I lost mine when I came out this year, and you'd not believe the fuss they made about it. Regular French red tape." Catherine produced it, and was just about to move off beside him when a very gentle and insidious voice murmured in her ear, "A little moment, madame, if you please." Catherine turned to behold an individual who made up for insignificance of stature by a large quantity of gold lace and uniform. The individual explained, "There were certain formalities. Madame would perhaps be so kind as to accompany him. The regulations of the police..." He threw up his arms. "Absurd, doubtless, but there it was." Mr. Chubby Evans listened with a very imperfect comprehension, his French being of a limited order. "So like the French," murmured Mr. Evans. He was one of those staunch, patriotic Britons, who, having made a portion of the foreign country their own, strongly resent the original inhabitants of it. "Always up to some silly dodge or other. They've never tackled people on the station before, though. This is something quite new. I suppose you'll have to go." Catherine departed with her guide. Somewhat to her surprise, he led her towards a siding where a coach of the departed train had been shunted. He invited her to mount into this, and preceding her down the corridor, held aside the door of one of the compartments. In it was a pompous-looking official personage, and with him, a nondescript being who appeared to be a clerk. The pompous-looking personage rose politely, bowed to Catherine, and said, "You will excuse me, madame. but there are certain formalities to be complied with. Madame speaks French, I trust.
Sufficiently, I think, monsieur, replied Catherine in that language.
That is good. Pray be seated, madame. I am Monsieur Caux, the commissary of police.
He blew out his chest importantly, and Catherine tried to look sufficiently impressed.
You wish to see my passport? She inquired. Here it is.
The commissary eyed her keenly and gave a little grunt.
Thank you, madame, he said, taking the passport from her.
He cleared his throat.
But what I really desire is a little information.
Information?
The commissary nodded his head slowly.
About a lady who has been a fellow passenger of yours. You lunched with her yesterday.
I'm afraid I can't tell you anything about her. We fell into conversation over our meal, but she's a complete stranger to me. I've never seen her before.
And yet, said the commissary sharply, you returned to her compartment with her after lunch and sat talking for some time.
Yes, said Catherine, that is true.
The commissary seemed to expect her to say something more. He looked at her encouragingly.
Yes, madame.
Well, monsieur, said Catherine, you can perhaps give me some idea of that conversation?
I could, said Catherine, but at the moment I see no reason to do so.
In a somewhat British fashion, she felt annoyed. This foreign official seemed to her impertinent.
No reason? Said the commissary.
Oh, yes, madame. I can assure you that there is a reason.
Then perhaps you'll give it to me.
The commissary rubbed his chin thoughtfully for a minute or two without speaking.
Madame, he said at last, the reason is very simple. The lady in question was found dead in her compartment this morning.
Dead? Gasped Catherine. What is it? Heart failure?
No, said the commissary in a reflective, dreamy voice.
No.
She was murdered.
Murdered? Cried Catherine.
So you see, madame, why we are anxious for any information we can possibly get. But surely her maid...
The maid has disappeared.
Oh!
Catherine paused to assemble her thoughts. Since the conductor had seen you talking with her in her compartment, he quite naturally reported the fact to the police, and that is why, madame, we have detained you, in the hope of gaining some information.
I'm very sorry, said Catherine. I don't even know her name.
Her name is Kettering. That we know from her passport and from the labels on her luggage. There was a knock on the compartment door.
Monsieur Caux frowned.
He opened it about 6 inches.
What's the matter? He said peremptorily. I cannot be disturbed.
The egg-shaped head of Catherine's dinner acquaintance showed itself in the aperture. On his face was a beaming smile.
My name, he said, is Hercule Poirot.
Not, the commissary stammered,
not the Hercule Poirot.
The same, said Monsieur Poirot.
I remember meeting you once, Monsieur Caux, at the Sûreté in Paris, though doubtless you've forgotten me.
Not at all, monsieur, not at all, declared the commissary heartily.
But enter, I pray you, you know of this...
Yes, I know, said Hercule Poirot. I came to see if I might be of any assistance.
We should be flattered, replied the commissary promptly. Let me present you, Monsieur Poirot, to...
He consulted the passport he still held in his hand.
To Madame... Mademoiselle Gray.
Poirot smiled across at Catherine.
It is strange, is it not, he murmured, that my words should have come true so quickly.
Mademoiselle, alas, can tell us very little, said the commissary.
I've been explaining, said Catherine, that this poor lady was a complete stranger to me.
Poirot nodded.
But she talked to you, did she not? He said gently.
You formed an impression. Is it not so?
Yes, said Catherine thoughtfully.
I suppose I did.
And that impression was...
Yes, mademoiselle, the commissary jerked himself forward. Let us by all means have your impressions.
Catherine sat turning the whole thing over in her mind.
She felt in a way as if she were betraying a confidence. But with that ugly word, murder, ringing in her ears, she dared not keep anything back. Too much might hang upon it. So as nearly as she could, she repeated word for word the conversation she had had with the dead woman. "That is interesting," said the commissary, glancing at the other. "Eh, Monsieur Poirot? That is interesting. Whether it has anything to do with the crime," he left the sentence unfinished.
I suppose it could not be suicide," said Catherine, rather doubtfully.
"No," said the commissary, "it could not be suicide. She was strangled with a length of black cord."
"Oh!" Catherine shivered.
Monsieur Coe spread out his hands apologetically.
"It is not nice, no. I think that our train robbers are more brutal than they are in your country."
"It's horrible."
"Yes, yes," he was soothing and apologetic. "But you have great courage, mademoiselle. At once, as soon as I saw you, I said to myself, mademoiselle has great courage. That is why I'm going to ask you to do something more, something distressing, but I assure you very necessary."
Catherine looked at him apprehensively. He spread out his hands apologetically.
"I'm going to ask you, mademoiselle, to be so good as to accompany me to the next compartment."
"Must I?" asked Catherine in a low voice.
"Someone must identify her," said the commissary. "And since the maid has disappeared," he coughed significantly, "you appear to be the person who has seen most of her since she joined the train."
"Very well," said Catherine quietly, "if it's necessary." She rose. Poirot gave her a little nod of approval.
"Mademoiselle is sensible," he said. "May I accompany you, Monsieur Coe?"
"Enchanted, my dear Monsieur Poirot."
They went out into the corridor, and Monsieur Coe unlocked the door of the dead woman's compartment. The blinds on the far side had been drawn halfway up to admit light. The dead woman lay on the berth to their left, in so natural a posture that one could have thought her asleep. The bedclothes were drawn up over her, and her head was turned to the wall, so that only the red auburn curls showed. Very gently, Monsieur Coe laid a hand on her shoulder and turned the body back so that the face came into view. Catherine flinched a little and dug her nails into her palms. A heavy blow had disfigured the features almost beyond recognition. Poirot gave a sharp exclamation.
"When was that done, I wonder?" he demanded.
"Before death or after?"
"The doctor says after," said Monsieur Coe.
"Strange," said Poirot, drawing his brows together. He turned to Catherine.
"Be brave, mademoiselle. Look at her well. Are you sure that this is the woman you talked to in the train yesterday?"
Catherine had good nerves. She steeled herself to look long and earnestly at the recumbent figure. Then she leaned forward and took up the dead woman's hand.
"I am quite sure," she replied at length. "The face is too disfigured to recognize, but the build and carriage and hair are exact. And besides, I noticed this," she pointed to a tiny mole on the dead woman's wrist, "while I was talking to her."
"Bon," approved Poirot. "You are an excellent witness, mademoiselle. There is then no question as to the identity, but it is strange all the same."
He frowned down on the dead woman in perplexity.
Monsieur Coe shrugged his shoulders.
"The murderer was carried away by rage, doubtless," he suggested. "If she'd been struck down, it would have been comprehensible," mused Poirot. "But the man who strangled her slipped up behind and caught her unawares. A little choke, a little gurgle, that is all that would be heard, and then afterwards, that smashing blow on her face. Now why? Did he hope that if the face were unrecognizable, she might not be identified? Or did he hate her so much that he could not resist striking that blow even after she was dead?" Catherine shuddered, and he turned at once to her kindly.
"You must not let me distress you, mademoiselle. To you, this is all very new and terrible. To me, alas, it is an old story. One moment, I pray of you both."
They stood against the door watching him as he went quickly round the compartment. He noted the dead woman's clothes neatly folded on the end of the berth, the big fur coat that hung from a hook, and the little red lacquer hat tossed on the rack. Then he passed through into the adjoining compartment, that in which Catherine had seen the maid sitting. Here, the berth had not been made up. Three or four rugs were piled loosely on the seat. There was a hat box and a couple of suitcases. He turned suddenly to Catherine. "You were in here yesterday," he said. "Do you see anything changed? Anything missing?" Catherine looked carefully round both compartments. "Yes," she said. "There's something missing. A scarlet Morocco case. It had the initials RVK on it. It might have been a small dressing case or a big jewel case. When I saw it, the maid was holding it." "Ah," said Poirot. "But surely," said Catherine, "of course, I don't know anything about such things, but surely it's plain enough. If the maid and the jewel case are missing..." "You mean that it was the maid who was the thief?" "No, mademoiselle. There's very good reason against that." "What?" "The maid was left behind in Paris." He turned to Poirot. "I should like you to hear the conductor's story yourself," he murmured confidentially. "It is very suggestive." "Mademoiselle would doubtless like to hear it also," said Poirot. "You do not object, monsieur le commissaire?" "No," said the commissary, who clearly did object very much. "No, certainly, Monsieur Poirot, if you say so. You've finished here?"
"I think so. One little minute."
He'd been turning over the rugs, and now he took one to the window and looked at it, picking something off it with his fingers. "What is it?" demanded Monsieur Coe sharply. "Four auburn hairs," he bent over the dead woman. "Yes, they are from the head of Madame."
"And what of it? Do you attach importance to them?"
Poirot let the rug drop back on the seat.
"What is important? What is not? One cannot say at this stage, but we must note each fact carefully."
They went back again into the first compartment, and in a minute or two the conductor of the carriage arrived to be questioned. "Your name is Pierre Michel?" said the commissary.
"Yes, monsieur le commissaire."
"I should like you to repeat to this gentleman," he indicated Poirot, "the story that you told me as to what happened in Paris."
"Very good, monsieur le commissaire. It was after we had left the Gare de Lyon. I came along to make the beds, thinking that Madame would be at dinner. But she had a dinner basket in her compartment. She said to me that she had been obliged to leave her maid behind in Paris, so that I only need make up one berth. She took her dinner basket into the adjoining compartment and sat there while I made up the bed. Then she told me that she did not wish to be wakened early in the morning, that she liked to sleep on. I told her I quite understood, and she wished me good night."
"You yourself did not go into the adjoining compartment?"
"No, monsieur."
"Then you did not happen to notice if a scarlet Morocco case was amongst the luggage there?"
"No, monsieur, I did not."
"Would it have been possible for a man to have been concealed in the adjoining compartment?" The conductor reflected.
"The door was half open," he said. "If a man had stood behind the door, I should not have been able to see him. But he would, of course, have been perfectly visible to Madame when she went in there."
"Quite so," said Poirot. "Is there anything more you have to tell us?"
"I think that is all, monsieur. I can remember nothing else."
"And now this morning?" prompted Poirot. "As Madame had ordered, I did not disturb her. It was not until just before Cannes that I ventured to knock at the door. Getting no reply, I opened it. The lady appeared to be in her bed asleep. I took her by the shoulder to arouse her, and then..."
"And then you saw what had happened," volunteered Poirot.
"Très bien. I think I know all I want to know."
"I hope, monsieur le commissaire, it is not that I have been guilty of any negligence," said the man piteously. "Such an affair to happen on the blue train, it is horrible."
"Console yourself," said the commissary. "Everything will be done to keep the affair as quiet as possible, if only in the interests of justice. I cannot think you have been guilty of any negligence. And monsieur le commissaire will report as much to the company?"
"But certainly, said Monsieur Coe impatiently. "That will do now.
the conductor withdrew. "According to the medical evidence," said the commissary, "the lady was probably dead before the train reached Lyon. Who, then, was the murderer? From Mademoiselle's story, it seems clear that somewhere on her journey she was to meet this man of whom she spoke. Her action in getting rid of the maid seems significant. Did the man join the train at Paris, and did she conceal him in the adjoining compartment? If so, they may have quarreled, and he may have killed her in a fit of rage. That is one possibility. The other, and the more likely to my mind, is that her assailant was a train robber traveling on the train, that he stole along the corridor unseen by the conductor and killed her, and went off with the red morocco case, which doubtless contained jewels of some value. In all probability, he left the train at Lyon, and we've already telegraphed to the station there for full particulars of anyone seen leaving the train. Or he might have come on to Nice," suggested Poirot. "He might," agreed the commissary, "but that would be a very bold course." Poirot let a minute or two go by before speaking, and then he said, "In the latter case, you think the man was an ordinary train robber?" The commissary shrugged his shoulders. "It depends. We must get hold of the maid. It is possible that she has the red morocco case with her. If so, then the man of whom she spoke to Mademoiselle may be concerned in the case, and the affair is a crime of passion. I myself think the solution of a train robber is the more plausible. These bandits have become very bold of late." Poirot looked suddenly across at Catherine. "And you, Mademoiselle," he said, "you heard and saw nothing during the night?" "Nothing," said Catherine. Poirot turned to the commissary. "We need detain Mademoiselle no longer, I think," he suggested. The latter nodded. "She'll leave us her address?" he said. Catherine gave him the name of Lady Tamplin's villa. Poirot made her a little bow. "You permit that I see you again, Mademoiselle?" he said. "Or have you so many friends that your time will be all taken up?" "On the contrary," said Catherine, "I shall have plenty of leisure, and I shall be very pleased to see you again." "Excellent," said Poirot, and gave her a little friendly nod. "This shall be a roman policier à nous. We will investigate this affair together."